truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
This program, Bill Rabinowitz, Columbus Dispatch, will be with us. Talk about Ohio State and Texas in the Cotton Bowl. Notre Dame, Penn State, also in the other semifinal. Who gets to the championship game? Chris Bonini, The Athletic. He's been all over college football all season long. He's joining us now. Chris, who do you like in the title game? Let's start there. Tough question right up front. Who's playing for all the marbles?
Well, North Dakota State's up 7-0 right now, so I think that's where I have to go with at the moment. We got the FCS championship game on right now. The only NCAA official Division I championship. The college football playoff, I feel like I got to go with Ohio State right now. I mean, it feels easy, but they look so dominant through these first two games. They look like the team that I predicted in the preseason would go 16-0 and win the national championship, because I just thought there was too much talent, too much depth, too much experience. It was all there. We'd never seen a roster like this, really, and yet they kind of stumbled a couple times, didn't play up to their potential until now, at the very last moment, and here they are.
Why do you think it is? What changed? Ryan Day's saying, well, my focus now has not been so broad. I have a chance to look at it. You know, I'm more involved in the game planning. Like, okay, Ryan, we get it. But what changed at Ohio State in your mind?
I think they're just playing loose. It felt all season, even when they were winning some of those games, you know, beating Indiana and beating Penn State, it felt like they were playing tight. It felt like they were playing with the expectations of the world on them. And no greater moment than the Michigan game. They hadn't beaten Michigan since pre-COVID. And it looked like a team that felt like they had to prove something instead of just doing what they can do. And when you lose to Michigan, but your season's not over, it was kind of a moment for them to be like, you know what, like, screw it. At this point, who cares what anybody says? Let's just go out there and play our football. And Chip Kelly has called a much better game as offensive coordinator in these last two games, and it just feels like the weight of the world is off their shoulders ever since they got done with Michigan.
One of the narratives coming out of the Rose Bowl, and it's kind of one that I support, is Oregon's got great recruiters. They're terrific at recruiting and getting talent. They need to take a step up with the coordinator games. And they've got young guys like Tosh Lapoy who are really good coordinators, but, you know, Tosh Lapoy against Chip Kelly, that's an Ohio State advantage. Chris, how much of this loss to Ohio State does Oregon need to do soul searching, or can too much be made of that?
So I think it might depend how these next two games go for Ohio State, because if they roll Texas and whoever the same way they rolled Oregon and Tennessee, I think at that point you can just say, we may have just run into a buzzsaw that should have been a buzzsaw all year. And the thing I can't get over with Ohio State is, like, almost everybody starting on that team is like a third or fourth or fifth year player. Like, the experience, the number of guys who turned down the NFL to stay was remarkable. And that doesn't happen very often anymore. It may not happen very often moving forward. And so, you know, Oregon can be like, hey, look, we lost to a team that everybody else lost to that way. But I think moving forward, we're not going to see a lot of teams like Ohio State again with that kind of talent. And when it comes to talent, Oregon's got as much as anybody else in the country. And sometimes it just takes the power of belief to get over that hump. And we've seen that with Ohio State in this playoff.
We're talking to Chris Bonini of The Athletic. The playoff format, like, you know, before the tournament started, everybody started talking about what needed to be tweaked, what should be tweaked. Now that you've seen the opening round and the quarterfinals, do you have a sense of what you would change, Chris, if they brought you into the room?
I mean, honestly, almost nothing. I think the only thing I might change would be maybe how you do the semifinals and where those locations are potentially. But I don't want to change the first round byes for conference champions. I want the conference championships to matter. Now, the fact that all four conference champions lost, I don't know how what that means moving forward, but if you take away the value of the conference championship, you really take away the value of the regular season to me. And I worry that we're going to change the playoffs so much, so quickly, that we're accidentally going to make the regular season not matter anymore. I covered the Big 12 championship. It was fun knowing that the winner was not only in the playoff, but getting a first-round bye. It meant everything to Boise State that they not only got in the playoff, but that they got a first-round bye. And it turned out Arizona State was plenty competitive. They were ranked behind Alabama, and they nearly beat Texas. Maybe should have. Boise State was competitive with Penn State all the way to the end. It was the first-round games that turned out to be the blowouts. I wish we could give this version a couple of years before we made decisions about the future. And that's probably not going to happen because it may turn out to be some outliers or some weird results that happen this year or next year might be different. But there's a chance we're going to have four different playoff formats in 4 years from 2023 to 2026. And I don't know if you can take anything away from any of that with any real clarity because of how much it changes. So we'll see what happens when the commissioners meet in Atlanta at the championship game. Yeah, I don't think the first-round buys will change because you're going to need the Big 12, the ACC, the Group of Five to give that up, essentially. That seems unlikely. Could you reseed for the second round? Sure. But if you just go by seeding, you would have gotten Oregon, Ohio State anyway because Ohio State was the lowest-seeded team that advanced. So it was a really weird year, and I don't want to take too much from it after 1 year.
What do you think the Big Ten and the SEC are going to want? You hear the whispers and rumors. You know Greg Sankey, Tony Petitti. What are those guys going to want after 1 year?
Well, I don't know about 1 year. I mean, I'm sure they would love to get rid of those first-round buys because they would love for an extra SEC or a Big Ten team to get that buy. I think Penn State in this situation, and possibly Texas, if I remember correctly, could have gotten those as well. I don't remember exactly where Notre Dame was. But as for 2026 and beyond, when the Big Ten, the SEC actually have the majority of the power to make those changes, I think they'll want a larger field, maybe 14 teams. I think they'll want automatic bids, or at least the Big Ten will want automatic bids per conference. I don't know if that's a good idea or not. I, again, think that might take away from your regular season. The problem is, if you do your three or four automatic bids for the SEC and the Big Ten, your two for the Big 12 and the ACC, you've got such gigantic conferences now that conference standings are no longer a real good way to judge your conference because you don't play everybody. Indiana was 11-1, tied for second in the Big Ten. They were making the playoff no matter what kind of format you come up with. You know, that like they were ahead of Ohio State in the conference standings, even though they lost to Ohio State. Ohio State had two losses. So the idea is conference realignment and expansion, and now that we have these mega conferences, really, really make it difficult to come up with anything that makes perfect sense because there really isn't an answer to that anymore. And you kind of just have to make the best of a weird situation.
Chris Vanini with us of The Athletic. Chris, Boise State, Arizona State, I loved seeing them in this tournament, and Arizona State certainly gave Texas all it could handle there at the end of that game, and I think Boise, you know, probably didn't play its best game, but I still liked that they were in the bracket. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, oh, these blowouts in the first round, and oh, these I agree with you, the sample size is too small. Do you think Boise State did enough, and did the Big 12 champ do enough to merit everybody going, yeah, we'd like to see more of this?
I don't know if it's, well, Arizona State, yes, obviously. But I don't even know if it's as much as what they did versus what everybody else did. Tennessee got blown out. Indiana got blown out. Oregon got blown out. It's like blowouts just happen in college football. There's nothing you can do to stop that. I have been to, I think, 8 college football games this year. I think 6 of those had a point spread of 8 points or fewer, meaning on paper, they were going to be close games. None of them have been close games. I've got a curse this year. Every game I go to is a blowout. I'm concerned about the Cotton Bowl on Friday where I will be, that I will get another blowout game. That just seems to – it just happens in college football because it's a sport full of young people, and it's a very volatile sport. You never know you're going to get somebody on a bad day. Oregon just had a really, really bad day on the Rose Bowl, and it's the worst time to have a bad day. And those teams are not as far apart as, you know, what that game was. But that just happens sometimes. And so – oh, we need to reseed. Oh, we need to change the bracket to avoid the blowouts. Ohio State being up 34-0 on Oregon should tell you there's nothing you can do to stop a blowout. It just happens sometimes. We had blowouts nonstop in the 14 playoff. It's like nobody remembers this. So my whole thing with the expanded playoff was always about what can you do with it to make the regular season more important. And I think the 12 team did that really, really well. And I'm worried that any further changes will end up taking away from the regular season.
You know, we're getting revenue sharing next season, and I'm not really sure. People ask me, how is this going to change things? And I go, gosh, I guess the teams that can pay $20 to $22 million are going to create a bigger gap. How do you think revenue sharing will impact immediately the 2025 season?
It's hard to say because, you know, every school says they're going to fully do revenue sharing, but I kind of need to see that first. You know, like, are your middle tier Power Four schools going to do it? Are your lower tier Power Four schools going to do that? And then on top of that, you've still got NIL through collectives and outside people who are still going to be paying money for players. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's pretty clear through the first couple years of NIL that it has flattened the talent level a little bit across the sport. That coupled with the unlimited transfers. Georgia and Alabama aren't hoarding all the talent like they used to. They can't, you know? And so I think that's one reason we've seen Michigan and Wisconsin, Michigan and Washington playing for a national championship. And now you've got four teams that didn't win their conference playing for a championship here. I think we've got more competitiveness just in terms of results, not in terms of blowouts, than we've had in a while. And I think you see it in the recruiting rankings where it's no longer four or five schools getting the top 100 players. It's, you know, seven, eight, or nine schools getting the top 100 players. And then those guys are transferring on top of that. So it's, I think there's a chance that it could further level the playing field, not completely level, but further kind of spread that talent out. But you never know. There's a lot of things we thought would happen with NIL that turned out not to be true.
Chris, Kalen DeBoer leaves Washington for Alabama. Nick Saban obviously saw something that made him go, this is the time for me to go. But DeBoer leaves Washington where I think he was making like $4.2 million. He's getting like $10 million plus at Alabama. There's a big financial bump. He wasn't going to have Penix. I hear some people in Seattle saying, you know, he's got buyer's remorse. He has to, or he made a mistake. I'm not quite seeing it that way. But what do you think is going on at Alabama with Kalen DeBoer?
I mean, I think he's just doing kind of what he's typically done, but what he's typically done is not good enough at a place like Alabama. He, you know, for all the success he's had, and he wins a lot of games, he's lost. He's won a lot of big games, too, but he's lost a lot of games he shouldn't have lost or gotten very close to. 2 years in a row, he almost lost to a 3-9 Arizona State team. He almost lost to Washington State last year. He's lost to some bad teams when he was at Fresno. And so, like, his team's not getting up for games that they should win has kind of been part of him for a while. But he also typically wins you the biggest games. Like, he beat Georgia this year. He beat Oregon twice. But 9-3 or 9-4, it's not nearly good enough at Alabama. I don't think Jalen Milroe is a good fit for what he likes to run. I don't think that was exactly worked. I'm very curious kind of what the quarterback situation looks like next year now that Milroe's gone. We'll see if he brings Ryan Grubb back down to Alabama with him, since he was fired as the offense coordinator with the Seahawks. That would seem to be a natural fit, but we'll see. I wouldn't say there's any remorse. I think it's too short to know that right now.
bigger sample size needed on all this stuff. A lot of reactive moves out there. We're seeing less reactive moves from the schools, probably because they're concerned about revenue sharing and don't want to have to pay two coaching staffs. But do you think coaches got a little bit of a reprieve this year with that, a little more patience, because it seems like schools are more concerned than ever with money?
I do think so, mostly. Part of that was just, Billy Napier did a good enough job to keep his job. Dave Aranda at Baylor did a good enough job to keep his job. Now, maybe without revenue sharing, could Billy Napier have been fired after the Texas A&M game instead of being given the time to finish out the season? Possibly. But we also ended up with 27 changes. That is a normal number for a coaching carousel. The difference is that only five of those came at the Power Four level. That's where we didn't see a lot of changes. A lot of Group of Five teams ended up making those changes. But I do think if you were a coach with a $10 to $15 million buyout, this was a good year to maybe have a bad year because the schools were going to be a little bit more careful with that. And then they were given the time and in some cases turned around the season like Florida.
Lincoln Riley at USC. I get asked about him. I look at $80-plus million in a buyout, and I just go, that's too much. How warm is his seat? And knowing that his athletic director, Jen Cohn, is not the AD who hired him, I always kind of look sideways at it. But you tell me, Chris.
I mean, hot in terms of him being fired, it ain't going to happen. I mean, just like you said, the buyout is unbelievably high, and USC is not a school with, you know, Texas oil money, even like Texas A&M. But it is more of like, so in what way could there be a coaching change at USC? Well, it might be if Lincoln Riley decides to leave and just go to be an NFL offensive coordinator or something. I'm not saying he's going to do that or that I know anything about that, but it's not going well. It's really not going well. They're getting progressively worse with each season, and now the transfer portal he's losing so many good players in a way that just didn't happen before. And so that's a really, really bad sign. They got pushed around in the Big Ten in the second half of games. The flip side, you could say, look, they lost 5 one-score games. A couple of those, 3 of those, 4 of those go another way, and you're looking at a pretty good season. You know, maybe they weren't that far off. Defensively, they got better. But you look at the talent level, and it's going in the wrong direction. And I don't know what you can do about that other than just Lincoln Riley and the coaching staff do a better job, because you can't fire him. So it's a really, really difficult situation. I think Oklahoma fans are trying to say what they said when he left, which was it didn't get better under him. And maybe they were right.
Chris Panini of The Athletic has a piece today about North Dakota State's Tim Polasek, who was working. Is it true he was working as a lumberjack when he got hired?
I wrote this story in 2020, actually. It was during COVID, and we had nothing to write about. So we talked to a bunch of coaches about one of their first jobs. And I knew Polasek because I'd met him before. He was at Iowa at the time. But he told me, one time back in the day, he had told me he had worked as a lumberjack. So I like hit him up and talked to him about it. He was a part-time assistant coach at Wisconsin Stevens Point in Division III way back in the day. And you don't get a lot of money as a part-time assistant coach at a Division III school. So he was spending his off seasons as a lumberjack, as a logger, cutting down trees and all kinds of stuff. I learned a lot about how that whole business works while talking to him. And one day he gets a phone call. He doesn't know the number. He answers it. It's Craig Bohl, head coach of North Dakota State, wanted to talk to him about coming up to Fargo for a job. And Polasek explains, well, I'm currently in the middle of a forest cutting down trees, you know, doing his lumberjack job. And he actually had to sell some golf clubs to get the money to go drive out there for the interview. He slept in the stadium for a while after he first got hired there at North Dakota State. He ended up at, I think he followed Craig Bohl to Wyoming. Then he was at Iowa for a minute. Now he's the head coach at North Dakota State, currently up 14-0 in this national championship game.
And
what
so,
a journey.
Yeah, so you write this story in 2020, but did you repost it today or you just retweeted it and go, hey, I got this in my bag of tricks.
I did share it. You know, just, that's the kind of story that'll always grab people's attention. It's one of those more evergreen type of stories. So when he got the job, when they opened the season against Colorado, now in the national championship, I reshared it, and a lot of people find it for the first time. And it's a really cool and interesting story, and a really interesting just kind of backstory he has to get to this point.
I love it. All right, you're off to the Cotton Bowl. We'll follow you, obviously. Chris, I appreciate you making time. Always good to see you. I'll probably see you down the road.
Sounds good. Appreciate the time, John.
There he goes, Chris Vanini of The Athletic. I want your take on the CFP. He's pumping the brakes, saying, wait a minute, we need to see more. Let's not be reactive. Tell me what single change you would make to the college football playoff tournament. And if you want, you can tell me what you're afraid they're going to do as well. I'll share mine coming up. 503-417-7575. You get the bald-faced truth statewide.